Well, bless you, beautiful hearts. Let's take our Bibles and go to Genesis chapter 1. I'm very blessed to be back with you, and we're continuing on this topic of authority. But I want to go into three factors or three aspects of living powerfully and living dynamically, three factors that we need to be aware of. I want to handle authority, and in the Old Testament, the word authority is the word dominion, and it means to have delegated power to exercise over an area of responsibility, so we're still covering that. Now, here in Genesis chapter 1, verse 26, it says, "And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth." God said, let us make man in our image. Remember the image of God, John 4:24 says, God is spirit. Now I want to qualify this a little bit for you. Because angels are created spirit beings, cherubims, seraphims, and the like are created spirit beings. But they were already in existence before we got to this record in Genesis 1:26. And it says in verse 27, "So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him, male and female created he them." Well, if spirit was already in existence, why did God have to create it for man? Well, that's a good question. And I think there is a difference between the spirit that is the angels are made of, the seraphims and the cherubims, and the spirit that is created within man. I think that's a different spirit. I think that that's the spirit of God. And whatever the angels are made of, it's a different spirit. It's spirit, but it's not the same as the Spirit of God. That's why I believe we have a unique position in God. And on the teaching I did, our position in His kingdom, I share with you why man is second to God. So well, I want to set this for you. It says, God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion, let them have rulership, let them have power. The word dominion means to prevail against or made to rule. And as I shared, in the Hebrew construction, it indicates a granted permission, or as I put it, a delegated power to exercise. And that they're to exercise it over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over the cattle and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. Verse 27, so God created man in his own image. God did it. God alone did it. The angels were not in on it. The seraphims and so forth were not in on it. Again, in the Hebrew, when it says, let us, it's part of the Hebrew construction to show the magnitude of that which you're talking about. If we were talking about a king, might say, we the king, because it's the magnitude of his entire kingdom, but he is the one functioning. It says God did it. And that is singularly significant. And I think it's really something because the word so God, in order for man to have this dominion over all of these different aspects and areas of responsibility, in order for man to have this, so God created. And the word so means the reason or consequently. If God wanted man to have this rulership, if God wanted man to have this dominion, consequently, God had to create the spirit in man. Do you see it? And it's so wonderful. And man is to have rulership. And it says in verse 28, and God blessed them, and God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. So there it is, really significant and really tremendous, because that's what it takes to have dominion, the Spirit of God, the image and likeness of God, as it says in John 4:24, God is spirit. So that's pretty neat. God created us in his likeness. Remember, when it came to soul life, look at Genesis chapter 1, verse 21. It says, "And God created whales and every living creature." The word creature in the Hebrew is the word soul. As a matter of fact, if you have a center margin notes, you might even see a note there that shows that the word creature is the word soul. Every living soul that moveth, which the waters brought forth abundantly after their kind, and every winged fowl after his kind, and God saw that it was good. So when we look at this word creature, it's the word soul. So when it came to making man, since soul was already in existence, he just needed to use that for man. That's what we have in common with all other animals. But when it comes to this spirit, it is absolutely uniquely designed so that we might have dominion. Isn't that something? Boy, oh boy. So man had dominion. He had rulership. So the earth was to serve man. Question is, today, are we serving the earth, or is the earth serving us? Because that was God's design. Look at Luke chapter 4, verse 6. And I want to look at this verse in covering the transfer of that rulership which Adam gave over to Lucifer, or to the serpent. And he has had that authority, which was the first sin of mankind, was to give up his authority. And we have to separate that from the first sin, which was Lucifer's rebellion against God. That was the first sin. The first sin for mankind was much later on, and that is man gave up his authority. And in Luke chapter 4, verse 6, it says, "And the devil said unto him," this is in the temptations of Jesus Christ, "and the devil said unto him, all this all this power, exousia, delegated power to exercise over an area of responsibility, will I give thee?" So the devil's offering it to Jesus, "and the glory of them, for that is delivered unto," what? "Me." Yes, it's delivered unto me. "And to whomsoever I will, I give it." The adversary got that dominion. In the New American Standard Version, it reads, "It's been handed over to me, and I give it to whomsoever I wish." The New International Translation says, "I will give the authority and the splendor, for it is given to me, and I can give it to anyone I want." So that's pretty interesting. So man had lost that dominion, or turned it over to the adversary, and Jesus Christ had to gain it back for us. So who has rulership and authority? Well, verse 6 says that the devil. And so I wanted to read you those versions. Now, from time to time, someone would arise and claim back at least a portion of that dominion to an extent and a certain degree. For instance, a king. Or like in Nehemiah 25, certain cities, certain limited areas, maybe they were able to reclaim authority at least for a little bit of time. But you know, it could also be forfeited, and their rights could also be forfeited. If Jesus Christ claimed it all back by defeating the adversary's kingdom, let's look at Colossians chapter 2. This great record in Colossians lets us know, so that we can have this set in our hearts. In Colossians chapter 2, oops, keep slipping right by it. Well, Colossians chapter 2, and in verses 14 and 15, it says, "Blotting out the handwriting of ordinances that was against us, which was contrary to us, and took it out of the way, nailing it to his cross, and having spoiled principalities and powers," exousia, delegated power to exercise over an area of responsibility. He defeated that. He made a show of them openly, triumphing over them in it. And then once Jesus Christ had the authority, he could certainly give it to whomsoever he will. So today what we face are spiritual powers, but we have to always remember they are defeated spiritual powers. They are defeated spiritual powers. Now, as we individually exercise our God-given authority in Christ, there are three factors or three truths, three aspects we need to be aware of: free will, the law of believing, and our spiritual authority. Each factor, truth, or aspect has a significant part to play in the walk of power and victory. In areas, they may overlap or succeed to one another in priority. First, let's look at free will, the ability or discretion to choose. And I want to go to Deuteronomy chapter 30, back in the Old Testament. We'll go back there into Deuteronomy chapter 30, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges. In Deuteronomy chapter 30, and then in verse 19, here's Moses talking to the children of Israel, and it says, "I call heaven and earth to record this day against you that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose," what? "Life, that both thou and thy seed may live, that thou mayest love the Lord thy God, that thou mayest obey his voice, that thou mayest cleave unto him, for he is thy life, and the length of thy days, that thou mayest dwell in the land which the Lord sware unto thy fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give them." So here, free will is set, because you have the right to choose. And then he has to tell us what's the right thing to choose. Choose life. So, but you see, we have freedom of choice. You have free will. You have a choice. And see, for God to be love, he must allow free will. And some choices are good, some choices are bad. Some choices are bring blessing, some choices will bring cursing. We're to choose. But you know, without free will, there could be no love, because you'd have no choice. Imagine if your children had to love you. Then what blessing would it be for your child to sit down and write a note to you or color a picture and say, "Here, Mommy, here, Daddy, love you," and they do this thing simply because it's their free choice. In order to have love, you have to have free choice. And so every man is given free will. Look at Isaiah 14. And you can choose life, or you can choose death. You can choose blessing, or you can choose cursing. And in Isaiah, let's go there, chapter 14 is a record, because the angels have free will too. All of God's created beings have free will. They can make a choice. They can choose blessings, or they can choose cursings. They can choose life, or they can choose death. But in Isaiah chapter 14, verse 12, it says, "How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning," or morning star, star of the morning. "How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the star God," is the text. "I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High." Like the Most High. It looks like Lucifer had an eye problem. I. Anyway, here are all of his choices. Could he have chose blessings? Yes. But he, for his choices, you know, the things that he decided he wanted only led to cursing. So he had free will. And so, looking at free will, the discretion to choose, he chose, I will do this. And he had the freedom to choose. Look at John chapter 5, the Gospel of John. We'll look at the great record there. Going into the New Testament, John 5. Well, I'm a little slow in turning the pages here today, but John chapter 5. We want to keep working this and looking at this thing because it's very important. It's very important that we have free will and that we maintain that free will. And we can maintain that free will by choosing life. We can maintain that free will by choosing blessing. So we want to make sure that we're making the right choices. And free will is very important. Everyone has it. Or everyone is given it, saint and sinner alike, they all start off with it. But you can turn it over. In John 5, chapter 5, verse 30, it says, Jesus says, I can of mine own self do nothing. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is just because I seek not mine own will, but the will of the Father which hath sent me. Did he have the opportunity to choose his own will? Sure he did. He could have done his own thing. Jesus had free will, but his choice was to do the will of him that sent me. In other words, Jesus chose life. At times, we may wish we didn't have free will, I guess. But how would love be without free will again? But isn't it great that our children choose to love us, decide that they want to love us by their free will? And so it is with God. In Deuteronomy chapter 7, let's go back to Deuteronomy. This other great record. This free will is so important because without free will, love could not exist. Or, well, love would exist, but it would never be manifested without free will. God so loved that he gave. God first loved us. Free will choice. In chapter 7, Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 6, it says, For thou art an holy people unto the Lord thy God. The Lord thy God hath chosen thee. God has free will. And his free will was he chose thee to be a special people unto himself above all people that are upon the face of the earth. The Lord did not set his love upon you nor choose you because you were more in number than any people, for you were the fewest of all people. But because the Lord loved you and because he would keep the oath which he had sworn unto your fathers, hath the Lord brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you out of the house of bondmen from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. So there it is, really beautiful. There may be situations in life where people may be mentally incapacitated from properly or fairly exercising their free will, but that God covers under laws of authority, and you have to see how these all interrelate. Then we can also forfeit or submit some of our free will or limit our choices. Like, for instance, in 1969, I was drafted and inducted into the United States Army. My free will became severely limited because I was under somebody else's authority. And so, I wasn't free to go out at night. I wasn't free to go wherever I wanted to go. I was very limited. Especially as a buck private on exactly what I could do. But then as I gained in rank, I also increased in my authority and then was able to do other things. But I want you to see this because we should maintain our free will. Even the adversary has to respect free will. That's right. He even has to respect free will. For instance, they talk about somebody falling off the wagon, an alcoholic falling off the wagon. Now, a man by his free will may decide, I am not going to have a drink today. I am not going to drink. And he can avoid that drink simply by his free will, and the adversary has to respect that free will. But what the adversary then does is try to break down that free will. And so as he breaks down that free will, then what happens is we say he fell off the wagon. Well, he just gave over his free will to something else. And we'll get into that in more depth, I'm sure, at other teachings and other things. But it's important that we maintain our free will. And if you're losing your free will in some aspect of life, then you ought to get help. You ought to get deliverance, because God is so willing to deliver you. And we have ministers that have that ability and walk with that delegated authority and exercise it to help you get free. So never allow the adversary to put you back into the bondage. You deserve your freedom. You should have your free will to choose and to move. Now, the next thing is the law of believing, which again is allowed to every man. Remember, saint and sinner alike, all can believe. A believing one or a non-believing one of the scriptures. Remember, the law simply stated, and I want to emphasize simply stated, is what you believe, you will receive. And I want to go to Matthew chapter 21. And of course, this should be familiar to you. If not, it's the first time you're looking at it, then you'll get tremendous learning from this. But in Matthew chapter 21, verse 22, it says, I'm in chapter 20. I have to go to 21. Here we go. Jesus answered and said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, if you have faith or believing and doubt not, ye shall not only do this thing which is done to the fig tree, but also if you say unto this mountain, be thou removed and be thou cast into the sea, it shall be done. Verse 22, and all things whatsoever ye shall ask in prayer, believing, ye shall what? Receive. I know people have argued the law of believing doesn't exist and Jesus Christ didn't know what he was talking about. I believe it exists. I just believe that people do not understand how free will, the law of believing, and the laws and rules of authority interact with one another. Now it says, whatsoever ye ask, and in all things whatsoever ye shall ask in prayer. There's a caveat, buyer beware. That we need to know, because in 1 John, let's go there. Let's read this scripture together. In the epistles of John, 1 John chapter 5, verse 14 says, and this is the confidence that we have in him, that if we ask anything according to his will, he heareth us. And if we know that he heareth us, whatsoever we ask, we know that we have the petition that we desired of him. But remember, if we ask anything according to what? His will. And usually that's pretty open there. According to his will. Don't get too hung up on according to his will. Because pretty much anything that falls under choosing blessings, anything that falls under choosing life is fair game. Remember Deuteronomy 30. But suppose I decide, my free will choice, I'm going to put my head in a guillotine and I'm going to stop the blade with the back of my neck. That's what I'm going to do. Well, by my free will, I'm putting my head in the guillotine. And that may be my believing action that I take, but I think I'll fall short on stopping the blade with the back of my neck. It sort of doesn't fit with choose life, and I doubt it fits with, and the outcome would prove to be a blessing, at least not for me. Perhaps because I can't stop believing, my head will not end up in that basket in front of the guillotine. That may have some kind of an effect on me. But seriously, there are limits governing the law of believing. Now, when it comes to authority, there are factors that we need to consider. And again, I want to just set for you, you know, when it comes to the law of believing, there are limits. Remember, whatsoever you shall ask in prayer, believing. But that believing has to fit within the framework of according to his will. And his will is that which is blessings. Choose that which is blessing. Choose that which is life. So we want to make sure that we're looking in terms of that, and that we're not giving up our freedom of will. Now, as born-again ones, we have been given delegated power to exercise over an area of responsibility. So I want to go to Luke chapter 9, in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 9, and in verse 1, it says, after these things, the Lord appointed other 70 also. This is not just apostles, this is other 70. These are disciples. And they're mature disciples that he's called. He's appointed other. I'm in chapter 10, verse 1. After these things, the Lord appointed other 70 also, and sent them two and two before his face into every city and place whither he himself would come. But I do want to go back to chapter 9 and verse 1, because he's sending out these 70 in a very similar capacity. Then in chapter 9, verse 1, it says, then he called his 12 disciples together and gave them power. That's dunamis. That's the potential. So they had the potential and authority. So not only did they have the potential power, but then they had the authority. They had the delegation to utilize that power. You got it? They didn't just have the power and then they're kind of left there. You know, for instance, when I was in the military, I had a gun. But in many of the areas that I was sent to were not a free fire zone, so I wasn't allowed to shoot back. If somebody was shooting at me because of military laws, I was not allowed to shoot back unless I got permission. And it was, you know, according to events and so forth. Well, that's not the way God works. He gives us the power, and then he gives us the delegated responsibility or the delegated authority to exercise it over an area of responsibility. And it tells us here what that area of responsibility was. He gave them authority, exercise power, delegated exercise power over an area of responsibility, which was all devils and to cure what? Diseases. So what's our authority? How far is the extent of it? What are we authorized to do? Well, we're to utilize that power over all devils and over diseases, to cure diseases. They were delegated power to exercise over an area of responsibility. Now, verse 5 tells us there are caveats in it. Why? Because everybody has free will. Everybody can utilize the law of believing or decide not to believe. And that will affect how you can exercise that power, how far your authority can go. Because look at verse 5. And whosoever will not receive you when you go out of that city, shake off the dust, the very dust from your feet for a testimony against them. So are there going to be some that didn't want the disciples there, didn't want the apostles, didn't want what they had to do, you know, the authority over all devils and to cure diseases? Apparently some people didn't want it. Could they force them to do that? Say, I've got authority. No. Many times, remember in Jesus' hometown, he could not do many mighty works there because of their unbelief. Let's look at Matthew 13. I want to show you because this all interrelates. And if you don't understand it, you're going to start to doubt, you know, either your free will or you may doubt your operation of the law of believing, or you may doubt the authority that you have, but you have to understand that all these things interrelate and work together. And there is a certain priority. And every person has free will, and I can't overtake their free will, even though I have authority on all devils and to cure diseases. Look at Matthew chapter 13, verse 58, and he, Jesus, did not many mighty works there because of their unbelief. According to the law of believing, they had free will to choose. They chose not to believe. Jesus went there believing to operate signs, miracles, and wonders, but he couldn't do many mighty works there because they didn't want it. You see it? By their free will, they chose not to. By the law of believing, they chose not to believe. And they did not allow him to exercise authority. So they were not benefactors of it. Were there people in his hometown that did? Yes, he did not many mighty works there, but he did some. So, really tremendous when you start to put this together. Did they have free will? Yes. Could they believe? Yes, but they chose not to. Why couldn't Jesus just do it anyway? Because free will, and they did not believe. No matter what Jesus could do and believe, he could not override their free will and lack of the use of the law of believing. Now, did Jesus have free will? Yes. And he went to Nazareth. And that was his was that part of his area of responsibility? Sure was. He was the get the lost house, the lost sheep of the house of Israel, and Nazareth happened to be a part of it. Was he believing? Yes. But other people also have rights, and they're God-given rights, to accept what he had or not accept it. Were any of the laws and factors violated? No. And so that's how it went. God did not give us the rights exclusively. I can believe or not believe. Does my neighbor have the same rights? Sure. There was nothing wrong with Jesus, nothing wrong with the countrymen. He exercised his right to believe. They exercised their right not to receive. And so it's the same for us. Jesus was most successful when people came to him of their own free will and believed that they would receive from him. Several records say that he healed them all. They believed and came by their free will. And it's simple. And on occasions he did go to people, but there are specifics in regard to that. You see, our authority is primarily spiritual. Let's look at Luke chapter 10. That's the primary area of our authority. But it also covers the physical. But again, people have free will. People can operate their the law of believing, or the privilege to not believe. And that's their decision. And God is so loving, God is so kind, that if they don't want to, they don't have to. Isn't that beautiful? But those that do, can. How wonderful is that? Boy, oh boy. In Luke chapter 10, verse 17, it says, "And the 70 returned again with joy, saying, Lord, even the devils are subject to us through thy name. And he said unto them, I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven. Behold, I give unto you power, exousia, exercise power, delegated power over an area of responsibility. And it's to tread on serpents and scorpions and over all the power, the dunamis, all the potential of the enemy, and nothing shall by any means hurt you." Well, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, and our authority over the enemy is complete. But there are still senses authorities that we also have to look at, and laws that are a part of life. Remember the record of Paul in the book of Acts, and I'd like to go to Acts chapter 24. We'll just begin to look at this. I want to set this for you so that it'll help you to understand how all of these interrelate. They all work. They all are of God. And he gives us the free will choice, but we're to choose life. We're to choose blessing. And sometimes people don't want to do that. But remember Paul, remember he wanted to go to Jerusalem? And God, it's pretty clear, didn't think that that was a very good idea, that he was not making a good choice at that particular time. But after several warnings, Paul went anyhow. Did Paul have free will? Sure. Paul had free will. He decided he's going to Jerusalem. And so what happens is he gets arrested because there was a big ruckus that went on, and Lysias came with some of the troops and Roman troops and guard, and they took Paul back to the Tower of Antonia where they were quartered, and they kept him imprisoned there. And then he's sent to Caesarea, and he appears before Felix, who is the governor, not the cat, but he appears in before Felix in Acts chapter 24. Felix is the governor, and as the governor, he has jurisdiction over this area. In other words, he has delegated power to exercise over his area of responsibility. And he has the legal right to do those things that fit within the Roman authority. Rome is who delegated that authority to Felix. And then Rome has these rules, and under those rules, Felix has the opportunity to exercise his authority according to what Rome has delegated to him. And so when Paul goes in for this trial in Acts chapter 24, the starting of a trial, the Jews are very smart. They hire this real high-powered attorney called Tertullus. And boy, he is top-notch. You know, there may be evil spirits that have worked in him. I know that the Pharisees and the high priests and so forth were very open to spirits and so forth. So this could have been a slam dunk for them, and they hire this high-powered attorney who may have had spiritual action working within him, but he's also very highly qualified from a census point of view. He's tremendous on his knowledge of the law, and he's tremendous on his argumentation and his presentation. And of course, according to the laws of Rome, Paul is able to act as his own defense counsel. And so they begin their opening arguments. Look at verse 2 in Acts chapter 24. It says, "And when he was called forth, Tertullus began to accuse him, saying, seeing that by thee we enjoy great quietness," he's speaking to Felix, pretty smart, he starts off muttering them up, "and that very worthy deeds are done unto this nation by thy providence, we accept it always and in all places, most noble Felix, with all thankfulness, notwithstanding that I be not further tedious unto thee, I pray thee that thou wouldest hear us of thy clemency," just a few words, "for we have found this man to be a pestilent fellow and a mover of seditions among all the Jews throughout the world, and a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes." Tertullus is good at his job, isn't he? Because Tertullus is not the one who's going to make the decisions. Who's going to make the decisions? Well, the guy who has authority. Who's the one in authority? Felix. So now he's going to present the best case so that, you know, he's believing that Felix will side with him, so he presents the best case that he can do. But it's still whose bailiwick? It's still Felix's authority. It's still under Felix's area of responsibility. So he's going to lay it on to Felix. Makes sense? He really wants to win this case, and he knows he's got to really appeal to the one that is over it, that has the ultimate decision maker. Verse 6, "who also hath gone about to profane the temple, whom we took and would have judged him according to our law. But the chief captain Lysias came upon us and with great violence took him away out of our hands, commanding his accusers to come unto thee by examining of whom thyself mayest take knowledge of all these things whereof we accuse him." And, you know, and of course all the Jews are agreeing there, and Tertullus does that great opening argument, which was pretty great. Verse 10, "then Paul, after that the governor had beckoned unto him to speak, answered." Well, who gave Paul permission to speak? The guy who was in charge, Felix. Felix said, "okay, now Paul, according to the law, you can be your own defense. Let's hear your opening arguments." And Paul starts. Now, is Paul believing to be set free? Sure. Is he exercising the authority granted by Rome? Definitely. And I'm sure he's also has exercised prior to this spiritual authority given to him by God over all the power of who? The enemy, which is the evil spirit realm. You know, he's not stupid. What he wants to do is block them from interfering, block them from causing other problems. And if they're going to get him, if they're going to get Paul, they're going to have to do it through their own will. They're going to have to do it through their own hearts. They're going to have to do it through their own life and believing. But, you know, let's put a ribbon here. And I want to have you look at another court scene that's recorded in Kings. Is it in Kings? Let's see. in 1 Kings chapter 22. I think this is this will give you an explanation or an understanding of some of these things. In Kings chapter 22, verse 1, it says, "And they continued 3 years without war between Syria and Israel, and it came to pass in the third year that Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, came down to the king of Israel." So Jehoshaphat is the king of Judah, but he's coming down to the king of Israel. So whose authority are we looking at? Well, the king of Israel. In Judah, Jehoshaphat's top guy. But now when he comes to Israel, there's somebody else over the situation. Can you see that? And they're getting ready to fight against Syria again. But Jehoshaphat wants to hear what God thinks, so they call in this prophet. And the king of Israel brings in, you know, Jehoshaphat says, "You have some prophets here that we can listen to. I want to get God's insight on that." So now the king of Israel, they're in his territory. It's his area of responsibility as far as sense knowledge rules and regulations and so forth. And he says, "Sure, I got 400 of them." And so he brings them in, and all 400 of them say, you know, "Yeah, go fight these guys. Go ahead. You'll take Syria." But Jehoshaphat's not quite convinced. And let's look at verse 7. "And Jehoshaphat said, 'Is there not here a prophet of the Lord besides that we might inquire of him?' And the king of Israel said unto Jehoshaphat, 'There's yet one man, Micaiah, the son of Imlah, by whom we may inquire of the Lord. But I hate that guy. I hate him. For he doth not prophesy good concerning me, but evil.' And Jehoshaphat said, 'Let not the king say so.'" In other words, "Would you just accommodate me? I know, you know, it's your area, it's your rule. Just accommodate me on this." And so the king of Israel does that. I hate that guy. Let's go down to verse 19, and you ought to sit down and read this whole chapter. It's exciting, and it's wonderful, and you'll enjoy it. Verse 19, "And he said, 'Hear thou therefore the word of the Lord. I saw the Lord sitting on his throne.'" This is Micaiah, and this is what he's telling him after they bring him in and tell him, "Go ahead and answer." "And he said, 'Hear thou therefore the word of the Lord. I saw the Lord sitting on his throne, and all the host of heaven standing by him on his right hand and on his left. And the Lord said, Whom shall persuade Ahab," that's the king of Israel, "that he may go up and fall at Ramoth Gilead?" In other words, he'll lose the battle, but sucker him into it. "And one said on this manner, and another said on that manner. And there came forth a spirit and stood before the Lord and said, 'I will persuade him.' And the Lord said unto him, 'Wherewith?' And he said, 'I will go forth and will be a lying spirit in the mouth of his prophets.' And he said, 'Thou shalt persuade him and prevail also. Go forth and do so.'" Of course, you know, that's just an illustrative point. That's God's not sitting there talking to an evil spirit and saying, go ahead and be lying spirit, go ahead down there and take care of the thing. This is all what the adversary had planned. But in any case, you see the spiritual things that can go on in a court. Lying spirit going in the mouth. You ever heard of people perjuring themselves? Well, let's go back to Acts chapter 4. So the king of Israel, all of these things happen, but do we have authority, and does Paul have authority over all the power of the enemy? Yes, that we can control. I can't control, Paul couldn't control the free will of Felix. He couldn't control the free will of Tertullus, but he can certainly keep the spirits from exercising themselves in here. Now, he may still have to deal with Felix's unbelief. He may still have to deal with Tertullus's unbelief, but he's not dealing with spirit power. At least I'm sure, Paul read the word. I'm sure he read 1 Kings and figured that out. So, anyways, let's go back to Acts chapter 24. And Paul's done an excellent job stating his defense, and he's going to hold these spirits off so that Felix can decide the case without spirit influence. Then in verse 22, it says, "And Felix heard these things, having more perfect knowledge of that way." That's what the believers in the first century called themselves, followers of the way. And Felix was knowledgeable of this, these believing ones. And he deferred them and said, "When Lysias, the chief captain, shall come down, I will know the uttermost of your matter." So Felix has to adjourn the meeting because according to Roman law, and Tertullus opened the door. He said, this Lysias guy is going to come down and he's going to testify, but Lysias is not there, so they can't continue the trial. So just like a typical trial, he calls a recess. And so they're unable to do anything. But look at this. Look at the blessing on Paul. Even though this trial is going on, he's working everything. He's working his free will. He's utilizing the law of believing, and he's exercising at least his spiritual authority. And verse 23, "And he commanded a centurion to keep Paul and to let him have liberty, and that he should forbid none of his acquaintances to minister or come to him." So is Paul walking by free will? Definitely. Is Tertullus walking by free will? Absolutely. Felix, yes. Is Paul believing? Definitely. Is Tertullus believing? Yes, he's presented his case. And is Felix believing? Yes, he is, but he is under the authority of the Roman law, and he can't continue the trial. But Paul walks out, and the blessings that follow him is he's able to be with people that bless him and love him and so forth. But he's in Felix's authority, and that's Felix's decision. So Paul doesn't give up, but Paul's not the only one with free will, not the only one that operates believing, and is not the only one that has authority. But where he has the authority, he's definitely exercising it. So, and Paul can handle the spirit realm for the most part, but the government also has authority. There are senses authorities that we also have to understand that are in effect. And so that's what happens. And then Paul appears before Festus. Festus comes in and takes the place of Felix as the governor. And the trial continues. And he would have sent Paul back to Jerusalem, but there are 40 men that have made an oath that they're going to try to assassinate Paul. And they swore that they're not going to eat or drink anything until Paul's dead. So, I mean, it's a challenging situation for Paul. It's really something. Do these men have free will to choose? Yes, they chose that they're going to make this oath. They really think Paul's a bad guy. Now there's spirit working there, obviously, because they're going to try and assassinate Paul. And Paul decides, I'd rather stay here, but then makes an appeal to go before Caesar, who is in Rome, and that is Paul's right under the authority that he has with the Roman Empire as a Roman citizen to appeal to Caesar. And they're going to send him to Rome to appear before Caesar, which is a better way to handle the situation than get sent back to Jerusalem. And he might have been set free, but then you got 40 guys that are going to be trying to kill him. that have taken an oath. So it's just a smarter way to do it. They have authority to believe from the negative aspect. So he goes before King Agrippa, who is over Festus, you know, because Festus is the governor, and then you got a king over the governor, and there's lines of authority there that they're following. And it winds up that Paul goes on a little boat ride. But I want you to see how free will, the law of believing, and authority all work together in life. And when we understand this and we see how it all functions together, then we can live powerfully and we can live victoriously. Because ultimately in Acts 28:31, it says that Paul had his own hired house in Rome, and he saw all that wanted to visit him. So in his house he had complete authority. But what about areas where you have spiritual authority as well as the physical authority, like in your home, like in your places on your job? We should exercise all these things so that we can live powerfully, that we can live dynamically in this life. When we understand there are three factors, free will, the law of believing, and the laws of authority, and they all interrelate, we can live powerfully, we can also live victoriously. And so I wanted to share that with you and bless your beautiful hearts. Amen.